This is Shane Hensley, creator of Deadlands Reloaded and Savage Worlds, and you're listening to the Vorpal Network.
These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Okay. Welcome back to the Gamers Haven podcast. The 2008 Roundtable Award nominee Gamers Haven podcast.
Yes.
2008?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
But we're in 2009.
Right, which means the awards this year are being given out for last year. This is how award ceremonies work, Derek.
That's lame. I want to win now.
Well, we will win now, but it'll be for last year.
Well, I'm
but that would be last year.
I don't
year.
Know if we're going to win. I mean, there are
We've
others.
Already won.
I mean, obviously... If
There's no one else.
If they don't vote for us, they're obviously, you know...
They people. Are losers.
Right.
Yes.
But we are humbled and happy with the fact that we are nominated.
You're humble. I am not humble.
Well, Jeremy's an ass, but...
Jeremy apparently is
not humble.
Cannot be humbled. I guess that's good for him.
Give me 2 hours and a crowbar. He'll come back humble.
Surgery. Knife. Ice.
Nope.
Stabbing.
No knife. Homie and laser. But yeah, it's still not going to be fun.
Lasers are cool, too.
Yes, for those of you who don't know, I have surgery tomorrow. I'm sick, in case you couldn't tell.
Leprosy.
And not just sick in the head.
He's already... Yeah, I mean, we knew you were sick.
It's now, leprosy.
No, real quick, the 2008 Roundtable Awards are presented by the Chronic Rift at chronicrift.com, apparently an old TV, a public access TV show from Manhattan. That's Manhattan, like New York, not Manhattan.
The
Kansas.
Real Manhattan.
The real Manhattan, yes. They found
Kansas
it upon
place.
Themselves to nominate the Gamers Haven podcast for Best Podcast. Now, also included in that category are podcasts, obviously, Better in the Dark, The Chronic Rift, Doctor Who Podshock, and Scapecast. Of those, I actually have started listening to The Chronic Rift, which is a good show, but, I mean, obviously, we're the best choice out of this whole list of people. I mean, we should get every award, really.
Yeah. I haven't listened to any of those.
Best website, best performer in a TV show or movie? Totally.
Yeah.
Michael Chiklis and S.H.I.E.L.D. Nothing on us. At all. Ever.
Yeah, we should send them a copy of Thousand Monkey Productions videos.
Yeah.
I bet you would win an award then.
I know.
Especially with ping!
Ping! Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, sound editing, come on. That's fantastic. And best writer of a novel, short story, or book? You know Neil Gaiman, whatever the hell, however the hell you pronounce his name.
Who is that again?
He doesn't need an award.
Does he write books?
He, you know, obviously he's not important.
I thought Neil Gaiman
he's
wrote
not
comics.
On the show.
Didn't he
no,
write he Sandman?
He's a
writer?
But he also wrote, you know, actual novels.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what was that horrible one that I couldn't get through? American Gods, something
really?
Like that.
Really? I liked American Gods.
Yeah.
I haven't even attempted to read it yet.
Passion.
It was cool.
It's terrible. And I'm sure I've just pissed off a lot of people. But when we get to the random encounters in this episode, you'll hear that I really don't care.
Ethan has... He just doesn't like certain things. Like
yeah.
This book, obviously.
Uh-huh. Well,
he's allowed to, you know...
I'm allowed to have my own
opinion.
Yeah,
my opinion is straight out of my ass, but that's fine. Yeah.
Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got them, and most of them stink.
Exactly, you know. At least I'm honest about it, really.
That's true.
I voice my opinion. But anyway, The Chronic Rift, the 2008 Roundtable Awards, we got a nomination.
That's
so
cool. We appreciate that.
This is the first time we've been nominated for anything, and so we're going to milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah.
Because it'll probably be the last time with the way they're talking.
Probably.
Well, you know.
We're going to win.
Well, yeah, I mean,
even if we lose, we're going to say lose, we win.
We have won. We just, you know, yeah, we bequeath the award to someone else, yeah, because that's how generous we are.
We are just that cool.
We're that nice. We really are. We're like Ving Rhames, Golden, yeah, Globes. We're like, you know, I don't want this. Jack Lemmon, you can have it. Totally.
Ving Rhames did that?
Yes, many years ago.
Wow, I did not know that.
Bonus to Ving Rhames.
Yeah, Ving Rhames is also a cool
after
actor.
We
so
win our
but
award,
I definitely think we're the best nonfiction book out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Best manga too.
Yeah.
Uni,
Canada.
Actually, know Japanese because I barely speak English.
That's okay.
So
Ethan and I speak a little bit of Japanese.
You can be the dubbed voice.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you can talk about, you know, shiny things and tortoises or something.
Is it just me or are the dubs always so far off what they are actually saying that it makes your ears bleed?
Some of the dubs are not bad, but most of them are awful. Yeah. But anyway, today on the Gamers Haven podcast,
game on,
we're getting the game on. We talk about game prep and getting your game ready to go, and you know how you can the different types of prepping for your game
and how many players you have to kill before the game starts because they won't get their
smurf
off the table so you can set down your battle map.
See, now I've got to make a note that I got to go put a smurf in there.
Mean when he said
smurf?
5 minutes and 2 seconds?
Or
five
when minutes. He said
smurf
the second time.
Jeez.
Yeah, what can I say? Smurf, did he smurf, smurf, smurf?
Man, you guys. But anyway, that's what we're talking about on today's show. We've droned on and on now for 5.5 minutes in the opening, so we will be back after this from our sponsor. And we actually do have a sponsor. So
we have a sponsor.
That's cool.
In a city, in a world, there lives a man who owns a hot dog stand. Listen to me. I don't know who they are. You have to get out. They're trying to take my hot dogs. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the hot dog man. Coming soon to a theater near you.
It's
little
a joke.
They know
that his hot dogs were gold.
The mob wanted them. I don't know who this hot dog man is, but I want him and his hot dogs dead. You hear me? Dead.
So who?
Well,
that's
all going in the outtakes.
Who did we just rip off?
Hello, this is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. When you play a role-playing game, do you like to have your own dice? GMDice.com is one of the best selections of dice on the internet. From stone dice to metal dice and even bone dice, GMDice.com is your dice store.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Fat Dragon Games, Green Ronin Publishing, and Wizards of the Coast. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
Hello, I'm Scott Rouse, Senior Brand Manager of Dungeons & Dragons at Wizards of the Coast. You're listening to The Gamer's Haven.
Yeah, Skype. Yeah, not in person.
No, David Icke never did email us or call us in any way, shape, or form. We are disappointed in David Icke for doing so.
I mean, his crazy, crazy, crazy ideas make a great game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To an extent, really, yeah.
We could call it
some people have actually embraced that idea. It's like if you read the Mutants and Masterminds rulebook, it does talk about the ancient civilization, yeah, of lizard people.
Yeah.
From Alpha Draconis?
I don't know if they're from Alpha Draconis,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Here, but you know.
You
could, it's your game. You do what you want. If they want to, you find them from Alpha Draconis, they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Warhammer.
Ethan's eyes just blink sideways.
Warhammer, the ancient ones.
Jeremy. You have no proof of that.
Get the axe.
the real axe, not the rubber
axe.
Anyway, today on the Gamers Haven, we are talking
about...
He's
our only hope for salvation.
Game on!
Kill him.
Apparently, I'm the only hope for salvation. But we're talking about getting the game going. And I think we've discussed a little bit about it before, but we're going to talk about... Mainly going to try to talk about prepping for your game, since we've all done the wonderful game mastering thing, and some of us are doing it currently. Some of us are not doing it currently.
Yes, thank God.
But this is... It's something we all have to do, and actually, one thing we can talk about is Jeremy and I are sort of tangentially dealing with a guy who wants to run something and has never run something before. So, you know, getting into that GM's chair is a hard thing to do sometimes too.
I guess you could create a mini me to, you know, train them to do that.
Create a mini-me to do what?
Edit.
To edit? Oh, no. I thought, you know, to run a game. You could
that would be cool
clone.
Too.
That would solve all of the player problems there is. You don't want to, you know, you have GMs who want to play and GM at the same time, so they make their own characters.
Yeah, the clone. You could have mini-me's of
you could
each of us.
Clone them. That's
they
brilliant.
They could run the game.
Somewhere Vern Troyer's getting his lawyers ready to sue our asses.
That's okay.
He could join us, too.
He's kind of a pathetic joke at this point, anyway. So.
You know who would be awesome to have as a guest
That's
gamer
sad,
in any of our games?
Vin Diesel?
Hell yes.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell?
Hell yes.
Jessica Alba?
Okay.
For different reasons, but yeah.
She could just sit there and read the phone book. And
That's true.
Happy.
Oh, okay. If I had my choice of a woman to have be a guest gamer in any of our role-playing games, I think it would have to be...
Your wife?
Well, my wife is always a guest gamer. But, like, an actress, someone who would actually be interesting to talk to would be Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, yes. Again, she could just read the phone book, and
they could both
be fine
read
with that.
The phone book
that
together.
At the same time. In a tub full of jelly. That'd be great.
Right, moving
Whoa,
on. Anyway,
this show
sorry,
has
I was,
really gone in a different yes. direction.
We'll
sorry, have to post pictures.
I got a little
you think they'll
distracted there
you
for,
think,
for
you
a
think
moment.
They'll send pictures?
No.
What are we doing again? Right.
Game on.
Oh, well, I know. I can talk about how I prepare for a game. I actually, the way I used to do it was I used to really sit down and prepare, and I like to know what NPCs are, and I like to know where the characters are going, that sort of thing. And the way I used to be was I used to map all that crap out and sit down and make NPCs up and make up, you know, little situations here and there that the character's going to run into. And then, you know, I got really used to the players sort of going off in random directions and ignoring the plot.
Plot?
That's going to happen.
Plot.
Because I'm going to tell you right now as a GM, if you run a game and you plan for the characters to do A, B, or C, they're going to do D. It always happens
Possibly
that way. Every
Z.
time. Every time. It's happened in the Deadlands game a couple times. But really... I know when I prep, the key thing you want to do is to try to be generic. Sometimes it's some people like going with like a timeline of events, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, and saying, well, this is going to happen at this time, and really you want to make it so this happens wherever it needs to happen type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you need a building to blow up and, you know, just happens to be the building next door to where your characters are, you know, who cares really where that is?
Yeah.
If you wanted them to stay at in number one, and they're staying at in number 12, then guess what? That building's next to in number 12, because no one's going to call you on that because it's your game.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But I know I like to... once you have had a lot of experience as a game master, you can start winging it a bit more. You can start improvising. But that is something that you have to work to. Let's talk a little bit about like first-time GMing. What was the first thing you ran? Was it D&D with your brother?
Actually, it was HeroQuest.
It
doesn't take a lot of prepping for that.
No.
We used to draw our own maps and things.
That's really cool, though. My brother, the first game I played with my brother was TMNT and Other Strangeness.
By the late Eric Wujek, yes.
Yeah. When he left and passed away, things went downhill at Palladium, didn't they?
Oh, things have been going downhill with Palladium for years.
Yeah, but he actually had
when did
decent
the company start? Oh, right.
I have no
getting off on that tangent again.
I have no idea when they started, but they were around when I was five.
Even a company putting out crappy stuff is going to put out a good product once in a while. I mean,
yeah,
this is an obvious, you know, one.
Well, shotgun effect works for some people. No, TMNT was good. The old Robotech was good, but that's about it.
It had great source material, but it used that awful Palladium system. Anyway, tangent again. But yes, so it was D&D you said?
No,
it was
TMNT.
TMNT and Other Strangers, right. And you were HeroQuest.
You were Marvel.
I was Marvel, and I was the one who ran it. So the first thing I did was GM. Or actually, as in Marvel, it was the judge, I remember. That's another thing. There's a lot of games out there that use different terms for GM. Mm-hmm. There's Game Master, Dungeon Master.
Rules Lawyer.
Director. Storyteller.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Really, Dungeon Master.
I think the funniest one I've ever seen is Rules Monger.
I don't think. I think you just go with Game Master.
Well, I think they still use Dungeon Master more as a nostalgic thing.
Yeah.
Especially now, D&D, It depends on the game you play. I mean, yeah. It really does.
When was the last time we had a dungeon crawl in any one of my D&D games? Oh, that would be the first book of the three. We're on the third one right now. That was four years ago.
Occasionally you need a good dungeon crawl.
Yeah.
Quite honestly. Sometimes you do. But sometimes it's good to have, you know, a session where you're prowling around the streets and dealing with political intrigue or whatever.
Yeah, I need to work on that. I think that would be an interesting
thing to
run into.
Unless you have a dungeon that's just dragging on, and then you just have to blow it up.
Then you just drop it into the Underdark. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. We had a dungeon crawl in one of my games. It was the one that we ran with Rachel.
Yep, that's true. But again, that was first level.
A good dungeon crawl at the beginning. I mean, that's actually good for a beginner game.
Would you recommend that rather than starting from scratch and doing a homemade adventure of doing a store-bought one?
Yes.
Depends on the group. If it's a bunch of gamers that have gamed a lot before, I don't see any reason to run them through.
I'm talking about a first-time game master, someone who's only just played or has just started playing, wants to run a game.
I heartily recommend running an actual pre-bought venture because it'll give you an idea of how things go. It really helps out. I mean, the thing is, you know, we grew up with like the old boxes of the D&D stuff.
Great.
Box sets.
Yeah. And if you remember, like the old D&D box sets had adventures in the beginning of each one of the box set books that you could go through. They gave you an idea of how to run stuff.
Sometimes a source book would have like an adventure in the back too. Yeah. I mean, they don't do that nearly as much as they used to anymore.
Because that's really nice.
Like I know a lot of the feng shui products had adventures in the back. So did,
a lot of Call of Cthulhu books.
The Deadlands, the old Deadlands stuff had a lot of it too. I guess Call of Cthulhu did too. Remember, they used to have it in like if you bought the main rulebook, you had like an introductory adventure or something.
Well,
like
they still do.
Not in everything, surprisingly enough, though. I know Call of Cthulhu still has it.
Yeah.
D&D does not.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in the DM's guide, though, at the newest one, they have a little adventure.
Really?
It's a first level adventure.
Is it an actual adventure?
It's a full adventure dungeon crawl.
I don't remember them doing that in the 3.5.
No, they didn't. They didn't do it in 3.0 either.
But I remember going through the red box, you know, with the little paper figs and stuff, going through that. And, you know, that was a lot of fun.
But I think if you're going to start the game,
I guess D&D also has, they do have the introductory set they put out.
Yeah, the beginner's kit, the starter's kit.
That's got the introductory rules plus an adventure, a first level adventure to run through. And I'm not talking Keep on the Shadowfell.
No,
it's like a
you're talking
box.
About the actual.
It's the box set.
Yeah, it's the Dungeons & Dragons starter's kit.
Right, starter kit.
And it comes with a set of dice, introductory rules, character sheets, and an adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really starting out, if you're brand new, I do think you should just go down and pick up a little first level. You know, whatever. Adventure. It doesn't have to be a dungeon crawl, just an adventure, and then make
it your own. Don't go overboard on it. I mean, try to get something relatively simple. Don't get a fifth level adventure that you need to mod down to a first level.
No
modding. Don't do that. I mean,
and you don't want any modding.
Remember, if you're unsure what to look for or you can't find a first level adventure, you know, the game store workers are right there behind the counter, and they're well-versed in their product,
or they should be. Good game store, if not, just go to, I'd say go to the Vorpal Network forums and, you know, talk to us or talk to anyone on there, and we'll steer you towards a good adventure we know about.
Or try to.
Even not talking D&D, I mean, another really good place is going to be RPG Now.
RPG Now.
If you want, especially if you have access to a laptop while you're gaming, it's invaluable, really.
And I really think something that is going to take one session, maybe an hour or two, starting off, because you're going to want to test the water.
Right.
You don't want something long.
No.
You want something short.
Definitely look at stuff that's billed as an introductory
type of a
product.
Especially if it's a new group, you need to get everybody involved, and that's going to take a lot of, you know, getting people's attention. You know, four hours can be a lot of time.
If you have an existing group, and you've played a bit before, you can go a bit more out on a limb and don't have to get the introductory set. But you still want to get, you know, if it's your first time GMing, grab that first level adventure or grab that introductory adventure for whatever game system you're looking at and read through it carefully. I mean, read through it once, maybe even twice. It depends on how well you retain that info.
Yeah, just make sure you know it.
Do as much prep ahead of time that you can.
Yeah,
that's one of my top tips right there, is do what prep you can ahead of time. If you know the characters are going into this dungeon or going into this building, draw it out ahead of time on your dry erase map or whatever, you know, if you have access to that sort of thing, and be, you know, be ready to pop that thing out rather than say, okay, hang on a second, guys, while I draw this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something that's nice. You're going to run into that one way or another.
Yeah.
The nice thing about pre-generated adventures is sometimes they'll come with pre-generated maps like that where you just go, well, there you go.
And you may, if you have a pre-established place where you meet to game, you may want to try to game there instead of your own place until you're kind of ready, just to get the setup, you know, the way you want it. But you want to game wherever you're comfortable to. Have a set period of time. Make sure you start with a smaller group. You don't want to have 8 to 10 people starting off. That's ridiculous.
No, I've been doing gaming for years, and I still can't handle more than 5 people. It gets hectic when I get more than 5 people in a group.
But, I mean, starting off, you know, you're going to need to do more prepping, but as time goes on, I remember back in high school, I'd have a game every week in my prep session. I would get out of work at like 3-4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I would then wake up. My game would start at 10 o'clock on Sundays. I'd wake up around 10:30, take a shower, and then that was my prep.
Right. Because
I had a game every week.
And some people
so
can do that. You know,
I knew what the story
sit
was.
Down and go, boom. You know?
People would come in, we were ready.
Yeah.
Everything was done.
Aside from when I misplace my notes or if a computer crashes and I lose all my notes. I mean, you see me. I don't even really look at anything. It just comes. I have it. It's. Mm-hmm. I need that backup in case, you know, what I usually do, and you guys don't get to see this, Becca does, is I'll sit down in front of my computer and I'll go over all my notes and all the different events that are supposed to happen and read through it before the game starts, and then when the game starts, I go.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have a notebook. One of the things I really like to get is there's a new little thing I can get from my notebook, which I may actually pick up, which is a remote sound control. I plug it in, and it wirelessly sends music to the stereo so that I can cue up music in my notebook and then start it for the various different scenes. You know me, I like to cue up music with my game. But
yeah. When you're going to sit down and actually run a game for the first time, it's the first time you're in that GM's chair, it can be very intimidating. What I recommend doing, and we say this all the time, is talk to the players, first of all. Get a good idea of what kind of game you want to run, if it's going to be a one-shot, if you're trying to go for a longer campaign, that sort of thing. Just sit down and make sure that there's that communication you need and the good comfort level. We've said before, you know, have people over, hang out, watch a movie, do something like that, play some board games, get used to each other especially. If you're already past all that and you want to sit down and you want to run a game you're comfortable, you know, with people you're comfortable with, I would say one of the best things that I would recommend you do is we've already been over the pre-generated adventure. If you're running the adventure, really prepping for it, I don't know what more really, other than, I'm really, really think prepping for it ahead of time is something I really espouse, but don't set too many limits on yourself.
Yeah,
don't box
don't
yourself in.
Don't obsess about it.
Don't sit down and write out, you know, 40, 50, 60 pages worth of stuff for it. And try to be as absolutely as vague as possible when you're setting up things. And also, don't be worried if there are giant gaps in any kind of a story or any kind of game you're running, because
especially if it's your first game, I mean, players are not going to be critical of you your first run.
It's
going to
be hard enough being your first game, and it's going to be hard enough being the first game of the campaign. Those are always rough.
And if you can build it into an episode like a TV show,
mm-hmm.
that's a lot better mm-hmm. to get your...
Don't sit down when you're trying to plan a campaign of saying, okay, who's going to be the main villain?
Yeah, you don't need to even worry about that.
One of the best things I would tell you to do is don't worry about the big picture at the start.
Mm-hmm.
Worry about the little picture. You know, what is the main point of the game right at this instant? Is it get to the end of the dungeon and, you know, save the princess? Is it get these documents to the CIA? Is it, mm-hmm. you know, steal this car from these bad guys? Don't sit there and obsess over who the bad guys are. Because the best villains, in my experience, have been ones that have evolved from the game itself. And sometimes it's the ones that have evolved just out of spontaneous I need a guy right now. His name is Hortense.
And I recommend that if you've already read through the game, or before, you know, you've got everybody at the table, close your adventure, have a blank piece of paper or notebook. You know, look through your book as the game goes on, but take notes. Just kind of pay attention, because if you pay attention, you're going to notice that some NPCs your players are going to like. Mm-hmm. They may like hate them.
And if you're not writing that stuff down, they'll mention, it's like, well, we want to go talk to you know, Bob. And you'd be like, who the hell's Bob?
Well, Bob was that character that we ran into that we really liked. And you're like,
we ran into him a year and a half ago.
I would have wrote that down. I'd be like, he could now be Bob the Slayer. You know, mm-hmm. who knows? Watch your players. There may be a random NPC that they just, you're like, this is a totally random person, but they like him.
Don't be afraid of cliches.
Yeah, use cliches.
I know the way I get sometimes is I'm worried, like, well, I want to do this, but they did this in this one movie, so I don't really want to copy that. Don't do that.
Players don't care. Your players will come out of the game going, that was cool, we did this and this, just like that movie.
Even if they realize it's from Lord of the Rings or realize it's from some
starting
movie
off,
they've seen.
Starting off, who
cares? Don't care. Don't worry about it. Make it your own, you know, and you know, they're everyone has gone to see a movie and said, well, I would have done it differently. I would have, if I had a character in this movie, I wouldn't have gone into the dark house all alone. I would have stayed outside. Well, by doing it this way, you give them that chance. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to steal a plot line from a TV show or a movie or a comic book or a book that you've read and say, hey, I want to do this.
Or steal from all three and all of those and mix them together.
You know, what's funny, though, is it's interesting. They'll sit there, and I do the same thing. You know, I run Call of Cthulhu, and I play in Call of Cthulhu games. You'll sit there and watch a horror movie and go, you know, idiots don't split, you know, smart people don't split up. Idiots are the ones that split up, and they're the ones that get killed. And you're actually playing the game. It's like, we need to cover more ground. Let's split up.
Yeah.
And you catch yourself doing it. You're like, wait a minute. Didn't I just say earlier that if we split up, we'd probably get horribly crap. And then your character gets killed by some horrible beast from beyond the stars.
Don't be at all put off by cliches. At all. It's entirely something that you can use to your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, who cares if they say, you know, God, this is like a Greek myth I read. It's like, well, yeah, it's because I based it off that Greek myth. Who cares?
If you want a NPC to be annoying, force them on the players.
That is true.
Players will immediately go, I hate this person.
Mm-hmm. He's annoying.
No matter what it is.
Don't burden yourself with too many NPCs also. Don't sit down and go, well, I need 25 people who are in this town, so I'm going to make NPCs for all of them.
You just have a book of names.
Yeah, book of names.
Program on your computer.
Program on your computer. It's book of names. There's plenty of places out there you get, like, an NPC quirk. You know, it's like, he has a lazy left eye.
He doesn't even need stats.
Run with that.
They don't even need stats unless there is going to be a combat. If there is, sometimes what you can do is just open the monster manual, point to something, and go, I'm going to use those stats minus the fire breathing. You know, just stuff like that.
Right.
Also, use your common sense. If the players pick a fight with a random farmer, well,
make that farmer a nasty bastard.
Well, you don't really need stats, you know, a round of combat at that, and probably the farmer, if he's a normal NPC, is just down.
Yeah, if one hit usually will do it.
If you're being mean, the players have killed that farmer, and guess what? Now the law are after him. If you don't care, maybe the farmer's fine and everybody had a, you know, grand old time. But as Ethan said, don't burden yourself with too many NPCs. Just have names. Mm-hmm. Just have a couple of quirks here and there. And again, take notes. If an NPC is working, write it down.
Yeah. Most of the NPCs that my player characters run into are very large creature NPCs, I think is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
The only NPCs really that are of note in my game are Chimera, and then there's two coming up that'll be important that you guys haven't met yet in the new book. And then, of course, there's your brother.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But I think you're going to be shocked with the next game.
If you want a NPC to survive and they are an enemy, give them an escape route.
Always give them an escape route.
Yeah. Some games have that built into it with, you know, like Mutants and Masterminds have villain points and stuff like that, but... and I speak from experience on this. Don't just say, okay, well, the bad guy gets away.
Yeah, don't do that.
You know, and I'm not saying Don't sit down and try to figure out an elaborate scheme as to how your villain gets away. The opportunity will present itself in the game. And whether it's like, okay, well, you were actually fighting a magical illusion all that time and he got away at this point, that happens. And a lot of good players are going to work with you on that.
Yeah.
And if you have a recurring villain like that, people are going to be like, I want that, and I want that mofo dead.
And it could be that they defeat the guy
in combat. I want his boots.
And then,
his smoking boots.
I want the smoking boots. It could be that you defeat him in combat and the cavern falls in on him.
Right.
Well, you never find the body. Well, that's an easy thing.
Mm-hmm. Don't overdo that, obviously, unless we've almost killed him 14 times.
Unless if you're going to do that, then that particular villain shouldn't be the main villain.
Yeah.
He should just be that's annoying. That's another thing. He starts out as the main villain, but soon he just becomes a funny little side thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, you thought that was the main villain. No, there's another guy behind
him. He can't really mess up the players. He just shows up to cause a little bit of confusion and chaos and then gets hit by a car. You know?
In my D&D game that I ran you guys through, when you first met the villain, he didn't care about you guys at all because you guys were low level people who were little peons, and he's like, yeah, whatever.
And now he's dead.
Yes, now he's dead.
Very
now
dead.
There are smoking boots again. Yes,
very dead. The bastard is dead.
That's sort of NPC prep. I think we should take a look real quick at the types of games that you have to prep for.
And also picking your group.
D&D, right.
Because I really think if you're starting off, mm-hmm. or even just starting the game, whether new or not, you need to pick your players.
Right.
You need to,
excluding some people, that means excluding some people.
Yeah. And however you do that, that's up to you. That was a different show.
If you're going to be a game master, don't be afraid to step in there and step on a few toes and go.
So,
You're not going to go straight to people and go, I don't want you in my game.
Yeah, don't do that.
You're just not inviting them.
Then you're a jerk.
Yeah. If they ask about it, said, well, I only wanted a small group.
Gather your victims, summon your minions, call your friends, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Deadlands game. I have had a huge plethora of players available to me, but I only really wanted four people. I only wanted a small group, and I asked those four people.
Keep in mind, some people either don't like or don't do well in certain games.
Right.
It's nothing against those like me. Call of Cthulhu, not my game of choice. So guess what? I don't play it. Mm-hmm. I don't expect people to ask me about it, and I don't play it. Someone asks me about it, my answer is normally,
I don't play.
I don't play.
Right.
And that's fine. So guess what? There's a Call of Cthulhu game. I'm probably not going to get invited, and I'm okay with that. There's other players that don't like other types of games. You kind of have to ask.
Unless you're an ass like me, and every time I have a Call of Cthulhu game, I invite Jeremy.
But he's an ass.
Yes, I am.
Jeremy, he is.
And one of these days, Jeremy will actually come to a Call of Cthulhu game, and he might actually have a good time. Maybe.
Maybe, possibly, yes.
Yeah.
No. I refuse now.
He says that now.
But either way, you still need to pick your friends. Now, that does not your friends, your players. That doesn't mean you're not going to draw other people in.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get comfortable, you can be like, come on. But at the beginning, you're going to want someone who knows the rules. Not someone who's going to overpower you, just someone who knows the rules. And then people that are pretty easygoing. Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid if you don't know the rules particularly well. Tell the players that. It's like, I'm still learning the system.
Yeah.
And they're going to work with you on that. They're going to understand. It's like, okay, in last session we did this, but what I found out the rules are supposed to do this.
Yeah.
Well, just, let them know that and move on. Say, okay, from now on we're going to be doing it this way because that's how it's supposed to be. And players are going to work with you as long as you're
don't
fair about it.
Don't punish the players for rule mistakes.
No.
Make sure you, for everything you take away,
you give them something.
Offer something.
Right.
Yeah. And if you totally just screw up a rule, if they don't catch it, sometimes you just move on.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Also,
you're there. Ultimately, you're there to have fun.
Just roll dice.
Yeah.
Just once in a while, roll dice.
And if you're not sure what the rules are on something,
just
have them make a check. Have them make a check.
It's amazing if you just roll a bunch of dice 20s, people start looking at you.
Yes.
Something's going on.
We know something bad's going
on
when Jeremy
thinks
a bunch of D20s.
Just because you're an ass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not Jeremy.
There is that, yeah.
No, Jeremy.
So,
Jeremy has a reason when he picks up that many dice,
so
and it's never a good thing.
We talked about, you need to kind of pick your people.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of pick, prep.
Right.
like, comfort zone, like where you're at.
What do you do when you prep for a game?
Now?
Yes. Well, what did you do to prep for a game early on in your GMing career? And
like I said,
now,
took a shower.
Took a shower and then just went.
And I just sat in my chair.
You're like, okay, open the monster manual to page one, say roll initiative.
No.
Okay, not that.
But I had an idea.
You're fighting the table of contents, yes.
I had an idea.
That's a nasty beast.
Yeah. He just keeps coming and attacking.
I know, it's terrible.
But at the same time, that was an established game, so I knew how the story was going. But normally what I do over the week is I would start thinking about NPCs and then encounters. And I would just randomly, you know, I would take what I wanted for this game. Mm-hmm. Maybe this game's theme in my head would be green skins.
Right.
So no matter what happens, there's going to be a lot of green skins.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the theme of this particular session is undead.
Right.
You know, and then I would just start looking through it. And I would normally have a main encounter and a couple little encounters. I would plan them, and then I would just sit back and see what happens. And if we didn't get to a monster, I don't really care. Nowadays, I do a little bit more prepping. I'm older. You know, I mess with my computer. You know, type things up, print things. I like to have a lot of props and just stuff. Back in the day, I didn't have a lot of stuff. Read the source material. You know, you need to know, like, distance. You need to... Really, you need to know random stuff. Your player is going to ask you something really totally stupid or random.
And you're going to have to pick up the book and look it up.
Yeah, so if you can just come up with something, that's better.
Yeah.
You know, or if you're forward thinking like Ethan normally is, when you buy a new system that you're going to run, buy the Game Master screen, because a lot of that random nonsensical stuff that you don't stop to think to bone up on is actually on the GM screen.
Borrow one of those.
Yeah.
Or one of the funniest things I've seen is they're really inexpensive. Inn or tavern menus.
Yeah.
How many times, it's so ridiculous, you won't even think about it, and then a player will be like,
well, what's to eat at the tavern?
And you'll get hung up on a little thing like that.
Yeah, and it's like, well, like, they have this. Well, do they have this? How much does this cost? I don't know.
Well, if
you have a menu, just hand them a menu.
Right.
Does it have anything to do with the game?
I mean, there are online flash generators. If you have a laptop handy, you can just go click. Okay, it is, you know, Bugbear or, you know, Owlbear today.
But don't get irritated
Owlbear
at
sticks.
Your players.
Yeah.
If they go off of something that you're not prepped for, make something up. Because guess what? Each player has their own individual reason for being there.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be because of the plot. It could be because they want to develop their character in a certain way. And guess what? Unfortunately, at that night, their character needs to know what they're eating. That's totally stupid, it might be in your head. But for that point...
And sometimes they just want to know what that shop has and stuff.
That's all they want to know.
They want to know what scrolls these people have. They want to know what weapons this merchant has, and they just want to spend 3 hours shopping.
You may not
the
get to the actual... So, when it comes to XP...
Yeah, don't be pissed off if they don't make it to the quote-unquote adventure. As long as people have a good time, that's all you want.
Because guess what? Any of your prep time, you just sigh, put your notes away, and the next time, you can put it out again. If anything, you've now dragged two sessions out of the one.
Exactly.
I've had so many of those where it's like, huh, this one session has become three now.
Yes.
And everybody's having fun.
Yes.
And that's all that matters.
That happens to me all the time. And I know when I'm sitting down to prep for a session during the week, you know, it's, the first thing I think about is, okay, what needs to happen this next session? What are the characters doing? Okay, they're going to this place and they need to find this information. It's like, okay, so first they can do this, and then I start thinking in terms of how the night can go on. It's like, okay, well, the first encounter or first scene is at this place, and then moving on, it's at this next place, and it's like, okay, I should put in a fight. Where would one makes sense, where and what are the, who are the antagonists? Are they, is it a random encounter? Is it a people who are gunning for the characters? That's what I generally do, is I go step by step in my mind and maybe jot down just a little sentence, a little note. That could be on the notepad on your computer, could be on a piece of paper, could be on a cocktail napkin. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I sit down. I go, okay, well, the characters are doing this. This is their current goal of what they're trying to find. They can go here and get this information. They find this information. And meanwhile, the bad guys are going to do this. And that sort of dovetails from there. And you see, eventually you work into something and you feel that, okay, that's enough, I think, to fill a session. And I've had to go, okay, that's enough to fill a session. And we get through half of that for a session.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, well, you already got the next session done.
Yeah. So guess what? You can sleep because you don't have to prep.
Right.
Wow.
And so...
You guys prepare your games a lot different than
And
I
if
do.
Something is slowing down, blow something up.
Yeah.
Not always. No, I would have to disagree with that.
Just blow up something up or have an NPC be eaten by something.
I would have to disagree with that, but...
yeah.
You and that the dynamite thing.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you go about prepping?
Well, as you know, when I run my game, I usually have intervals of... I'll run the game for about 2 years, and then I'll have a mm-hmm. year off because I let someone else run anything. Mm-hmm. Well, that whole year that it's off, I'm usually writing the next game arc. Mm-hmm. And it's everything's typed up and written up, and you know, I put in enough random stuff that if you guys miss something, you're not going to be completely
right.
derailed from the plot and stuff. And on top of that, if you guys do something completely unexpected, I just improvise. But the fact of the matter is my games are all completely planned out before they ever even start,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm like, wow, you guys actually plan every week. I've never done that. I've always plotted out my whole entire story or the whole entire game arc with enough random stuff before the game ever even starts. So it's strange hearing the way you guys do it, because mm-hmm. now I'm looking at going... That would be a hell of a lot easier than the way I do it.
But sometimes the players and them getting off of what you have planned turns out to be better than what you had planned.
Mm-hmm.
So,
there's been times.
Be ready. Don't be afraid to throw out throw one of your ideas away.
Because you may be like,
because you know,
this is
a player could say, "Hey, I think this is going on," and you go, "Yeah, that is what's going on."
I had so many NPCs who I'm like, I'm going to take them down this path. And then suddenly somebody came up with something. I'm like, that's a great idea.
Let's go down this
They're
path.
Going to
I'm going
this.
To steal that right now.
And the players, and what's great, most players don't think about it. And then they go, it actually happened that way. It makes a player feel great.
Yeah.
You know, actually what's interesting is that happens a lot in my games too. I usually end up improvising a lot. Like the end of the second book was supposed to be a massive battle
mm-hmm.
with you guys facing off against your brother, and the actual original ending for the second book was going to be not a gateway opening up to a world full of dragons. You guys were so obsessed on this idea of dragons. I was in the middle of the game. I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring dragons into this world and watch as they shake and quiver in fear because they're like, there's nothing here that we have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But and what really got me was Andre made a offhanded comment, which actually is stuck. He said, you know, it'd be funny if the main villain wasn't actually Ethan's brother, it was actually some other character. And it's like, I don't think anybody caught it, but the person that actually helped John's character, Scorch, escape, mm-hmm. was your brother.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody caught that at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. And it's stuff like that that's just wonderful. And actually, yes, I did catch that. I remember.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to pay attention to what the players are saying. Even things are out of character. Now, you don't screw someone over ever without a character stuff.
Oh, I do. When they start metagaming, I screw them over horribly.
I'm not talking about metagaming, though. I'm talking about just random banter.
No, I will never punish a player for random banter. I do enough of it myself.
Oh, yeah,
I've
defused many, you know, horrifying situations in Call of Cthulhu by pulling out horrible things to say.
Yeah. Well, that's always nice.
Well, yeah, see, the thing
it's hard to be, you know, sitting there and quivering in our pants and everyone's, you know, squirting milk out their nose.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and I really do appreciate that because, you know, sometimes...
No, I'm pretty sure sometimes you find it annoying, but that's fine.
Well, no, I actually find it amusing for the most part. I've never found it annoying. I'm actually quite thankful for it because the last serious Call of Cthulhu game that I ran caused people nightmares. I had players come to me saying, I don't want to play Call of Cthulhu with you anymore because I had nightmares from that game you ran me through. And
I think
went,
it's fine that
I'd need to take a step back,
I
guess.
Fine as long as you recognize it's a game.
Well, yeah.
Well, see, the thing is
you're there to have fun.
Yeah.
You're there to hang out with your friends and, you know, play imagination.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But the thing is what really helps put people in that whole fear aspect of Call of Cthulhu is to hit people with their fears.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fitophobic.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know? I have no qualms against throwing you up against nasty giant snakes and horrible vicious creatures that are snake-like, because I know it bothers you,
it does,
even on a subconscious level.
I also understand you're not going to, you know, go into your bedroom and come out with a with a snake and plop it down on the table, because then I would have to murder you and run away.
After you flew through the front door.
Screamed like a girl, jumped out the window, and ran.
But that's another... That's another
that,
you know,
that we talked
show.
About that in the fear.
That's props.
Yeah.
But it sounds like your style
fears,
is a bit more... Your prep style is a bit more proactive, whereas Jeremy were a bit more reactive.
Yeah. Hey, that comes from the stupid, all the computer stuff. You know, you plan for every eventuality, and then, you know, you when the worst happens, you go, oh, we've already got a standard operating procedure for that. Here
but
we go.
Say, you know, you've heard us talk a little bit about the different prepping styles and different jamming styles that there are. Pick one that you think will work best for your players and will work best for you. If you find that that's not working, try something else.
Try something else.
Don't...
I would like to try something else anyways, because, you know, the amount of time that goes into prepping before, you know, before the game ever even starts, you know, I'll spend 5 months writing everything up. I mean, granted, it's 2 years worth of information.
My defense is to say if you spend, you know, 5 months prepping, you know, tons of material, if your players throw you a curveball, some of that material can just be tossed out the window, potentially.
And it is.
Or used in a different game.
And that's true too. In my opinion, that's wasted time. That's why I really think more along the lines of think generically as to, okay, I need this event to happen. Be willing to take that event that you planned and move it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a major event, you know, you should be able to do that without a problem.
Yeah, if it's a major event and the players are going the opposite direction of where a major event needs to go, I will railroad them into the major event.
And don't be too afraid. Yeah, don't be railroading. Don't be afraid of doing it. Just don't do it all the time.
Yeah, sometimes...
You need to put those characters on a rail.
You want the players to do what they want, but sometimes things get stagnant because they're doing what they want.
Your brother's a prime example of someone who always constantly wants to do what he wants and ends up derailing games.
He does have a point there. He does have that habit sometimes.
Andrew, yeah.
But he just likes, he's the chaotic element.
Yes. And you will run into players like that are just like,
and that's why
I am here to do whatever the hell.
I'm here to smurf the living hell out
but
of your game.
It's not to screw the person over.
It's how they have fun.
Yeah.
But I think that goes into
picking
your players. You know, pick the players you know are going to be interested in the game.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's if you know that, you know, your friend over here is it is like that, unless he's interested in the game. If you pick a game that he really wants to play, you'll see them like... We have friends that'll sit back and read books while we're playing, but if we pick a game that they get really involved in, they get really interested in, they'll put that book down and they'll get involved.
Yeah, and you can bring
people
back.
Well, most
in.
Of them will.
Most of them will, yeah.
But remember, we also... you have.
Well, on the occasional one, we'll be like, oh, I throw a fireball. You don't have a fireball, your first level. Well, I cast a magic missile.
Like, okay, just do a fireball in the middle of the
party.
Yeah,
okay. Good job. Now the party turns on you.
I almost killed him for that.
Hey, you know what? You guys would have been entirely justified.
Yeah, the shocking grasp on a metal sub.
But there's also, for getting the game on, you know, there's other prep. You may want to pick up some minis or tell, you know, have players pick up minis.
Battle
location,
mats.
Simple things. You know, one of the nice things, and you don't want this...
Even if you're not using maps, a good diagram is not
a
bad idea. If you're not using miniatures, you know, just grab a blank piece of paper and sort of do a sketch here of this is what the room looks like.
And one thing that's really simple, and if you can afford it, bribe your players with food the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not talking about every time. No, you don't have to do that. It's up to the players to take care of themselves. But that first time, buy some pizza.
Mm-hmm.
That first time, you know, just have snacks and things placed out. After a while, you can just be like, hey, I can't do that. You know, bring your own. But that first time, you know, and also for that beginning game, don't be so harsh that players are dying one after another. Or if a player does we're talking about the beginning of the game. If a player does do something, maybe because they're brand new or they don't know the system, that's just totally stupid, but they don't realize it, don't kill them.
Right.
You can mess them up, but you want them to want to come back. Some of us who've been playing a while, we understand certain things, but new players or players that are new to a system, if you just trounce them, they're not going to come back.
Right.
They're going to say this game sucks.
Yeah, they're not going to be happy if you beat the living daylights out of the players.
Let's not put this all on the GM either. I think
no, it's players.
The players need to do it too. If you're a player and you're going to be playing in a game that someone it's their first time as a GM.
Don't trounce them.
Don't
rake them over the coals. Don't they're going to be so unhappy like, yeah, they're never going to run the game again.
You might have the mentality of, oh, well, they need to learn, you know, to toughen up and all that. But seriously.
And let them run the game.
The game is it's a social contract thing. I mean, you have, you know, five people playing the game. All of them are there to make the game fun. It's not one person's job.
Yeah. And sometimes for us GMs, and I think this is true for both Ethan and I, we sometimes have to watch ourselves. Because
mm-hmm.
we want to step in and be like, you know...
Yeah.
And we need to just step back and go,
I would say don't be afraid to lean on someone else who is a GM.
Yeah, help them.
And, but don't, if you're a GM playing in someone else's game, don't sit there and take over the game.
Yeah. Offer a rule.
Right. You know, and if it's down to, it depends on obviously who's game mastering and
exactly.
whatnot. If during the game you say, well, you know, there is this you could do. There is this rule. If
you don't want to use it?
If there's also, some GMs will get offended by that, and you can just talk to them after the game, not in front of everybody, and go, well, there is this rule, you know.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure. I guess what we're saying is be diplomatic,
yeah.
whether you're a GM or whether you're a player.
And feel free as a GM to ask other GMs. You know, at this point, I'm not sure what to do with in the rule. Well, there's this rule and there's this rule. You know, we threw it out.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be fair. The GM and the players have to be fair. It has to be fair for everybody.
Right.
That doesn't mean the monsters aren't powerful.
No.
It just means there's a fairness.
Well,
so.
Do we have any final thoughts real quick to throw down on this one, on prepping and, you know, running a game for the first time?
It's a game
sort of
on. Location is important. Picking your players is important.
The old adage, location,
setting.
Location, location.
Yeah.
Location, location, location.
Picking a setting, a published one would be better. Your game, actual, what type of game? Pick something simple.
Yep. Pick your friends, not your nose.
Don't, you know, you really don't want to play like, I don't know, you don't want to play Palladium.
Well, nobody should play Palladium.
Yeah. But D&D, fun, kind of simple, but kind of complicated at times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe pick something that you're okay with. You know, pick some sort of system that isn't going to be bogged down.
Yeah, and one of the things that'll help a lot with GMing, although it may not sound like it, but actually try playing the game before
mm-hmm.
you
yeah.
run a game of it. Because that actually, it's amazing how much actually playing a game will help you get the rules
oh, yeah.
down before you actually attempt to utilize rules.
There are a lot of
options
out there for that now. I mean, you go to your local game store if they have open game nights and stuff
yeah.
like that, and try to get into a game of something you're interested in. The internet. You could go to our actual play stuff if you're interested in
yeah.
any of the stuff we've done. There are several others out there. Just do searches for actual play, and you'll find places like RPGMP3.com has a lot of recorded game sessions. And those are a good way to sort of listen. Okay, that's how that rule works. Granted, you need to have a lot of time to set aside for that, but it's a good idea. It's something
yeah.
to look at.
Just keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to get the game on, is just keep it simple, have fun, take your time. And if it doesn't work out that first time, I mean, that happens. Sometimes a campaign will start and die that first night. You just sometimes have to say, okay, I'm going to try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If it doesn't work and you feel like you're not having a good time running it and the players don't seem to be having a good time running it,
be
screw
honest.
It. Drop it.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, if you're not having fun running it, they're not
having
fun
playing
it. And they're just probably not saying anything to be polite.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you're,
don't,
not
don't
everyone's
be
as lucky.
To throw everything out and start over.
Yeah, not everyone is as lucky as I am where they have players that'll tell them when their game is sucking ass.
Feel free to take a survey at the end. You know, say, hey, what did you guys think?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then set up a time. When you're done with your first game, set up a time for your next one. And, yeah.
I think that's a good amount of stuff to talk about right there and a good amount of stuff to think about. And we'll be right back after this.
¶¶ Vorpal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it's easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
This podcast is sponsored by GMDice.com. You can never have too many dice.
This podcast is supported by RPG Now, the leading source of indie role-playing games, with over 10,000 RPG titles from over 500 creators and publishers. There are new RPG treasures to discover every day at www.rpgnow.com.
But for a couple of sets, it might be worth it.
Well, we're back, and today on the wonderful three-parter, we've got for you a lovely rant. Nathan's got a rant. I've got a review, and Jeremy has a gamer story to tell. Why don't we go ahead, and do you want to start with the rant? We started with the rant last time, so that seemed to do well.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to start with my rant. As you know, we're...
The rant.
Well, as you may all remember, or recall, I guess I should say, from previous online shows, that we're fans of miniature war games, predominantly Warhammer, and then there's me who likes Warhammer 40K as well, although I don't have anybody to play Warhammer 40K with right now, because I haven't seen Jay in a while. But, We like playing Warhammer, and we like the idea of actually having terrain on the table. And as time has progressed, I have bought terrain, Chris has bought terrain, and Ethan has bought terrain. And there's just one problem I have with this terrain, and that's it is so specifically modeled for such a specific set or environment that it can't be used for multiple things. So you go out and you spend, like I did, I spent $90 and got the Fortified Manor set, the town, you know, had, you know, a tower, a house, and the Fortified Manor, and a bunch of fences and stuff. That's all great and fine and dandy. Yeah, I'd love to use it. There's a problem with it, though. It's all designed specifically for the Empire. There is no, you know, there is no nothing else for it. It's Empire. Empire specifically. If you want to make it look like it's for Britonia, you have to mod the ever-loving crap out of it. If you want to make it look like it's something the Skaven have taken over, you better have skills with Sculpey, and, you know, a hobby knife. And you better be damn good with it, because otherwise it's going to look like crap, because they're designed in such a specific way to make them difficult to be modded. Now, there are ways around this. There are tons of sites out there where you can buy actually pre-generated terrain, and most of it will fit fairly well with various different settings. But there's a penalty to that, and that's that it's so ungodly expensive that you have to mortgage off, you know, pull a second mortgage on your house to be able to afford any of it. I was looking at a hill online on a website. They talked about how affordable they were. Not painted, just a standard hill that had the flocking material with it, but you had to add it yourself, and the hill was $145 for a 6-inch by 4-inch hill. I don't remember the name of the website, but yeah, $145? I'm sorry, I don't see spending $145 for a 6-inch by 4-inch hill. That sounds like an awful lot of crap. You go to other websites and it's like, whoa, we have pre-painted houses for 28mm scale or 25mm scale, which is what Warhammer is, I guess. Yeah, pre-painted house, $283 for a house that's two stories, that is 8 inches wide by 4 inches deep by 6 inches tall. I'm sorry, but my goal when it comes to playing war games on the table is not to buy Joe Blow over here a new frickin' Ferrari.
I'm in the wrong business.
Apparently so. You know, that's what I keep thinking whenever I look at these prices. You know, we need terrain. And the thing is there are those of us out there who can't make terrain. Nor do we know anybody who can. And we get sick and tired of being raked over the coals by people who feel they're justified in charging $35 for a set of fence sections that is 6 inches long.
Unpainted.
Unpainted, no less. And God, don't even get me started on the frickin' Forge World stuff. Oh, let's see. For a standard Warhammer-sized model that's made out of different material, it's, I can't remember the name of the stuff, resin, right? Polyresin? You're gonna spend $165.
Yeah,
I'd love to get a Rhinox rider set for my ogres, but the Rhinox, just the Rhinox, with the legs molded for the ogre so that you can just put an ogre bruiser on it, is $85 a model. Yeah. The point I'm trying to make here, what I'm upset about, is that I don't feel that people should charge so much for something that everybody's going to use. If you give it an affordable price, like that scenery you guys are talking about that uses cardstock, very affordable, can be printed, change the colors on it, you can make it look as much as you want. You make it look however you like. You just have to have a printer that handles cardstock. I don't. But for those of us out there that do, yeah, it works great. You can change the colors on it, make it look like whatever scenario or scenery setting that you need.
The diorama stuff, that's inexpensive and something you can use too.
Yeah. But again, with the diorama stuff, a lot of it, you have to have modeling skills to put it together. What's really great is the railroad, you know, the
railroad stuff.
The railroad scenery and stuff. That stuff's great. The problem is you have to be able to model.
Popsicle sticks.
Yeah, popsicle sticks. Glue. And hot glue.
And
spray paint. Makes great troll bridges.
It makes anything.
But, you know, I have tons of supplies down in the basement. Balsa wood. I have foam board for modeling stuff. And I've tried modeling stuff, and it comes out, looks absolutely like, you know, something out of, you know, that should best be left forgotten and buried in the bottom of a trash can.
Except we don't care.
Yeah. You guys don't care. But the thing is I can't do it, and I don't like doing it. And I don't feel I should have to pay $85 for a section of road, which is the actual price for that pre-painted road, the rubber pre-painted roads for 25 millimeters they have down there at Tabletop. I mean, he's probably not charging as much as it's supposed to, but it's $85 for a section of road that is 4 inches wide by 8 inches long. I mean, you're talking $10 an inch. I'm sorry, there's nothing that's worth that much.
Balsa wood, glue, sand, and paint. Or felt. Felt is cheap.
I'm sorry, I don't like the felt thing. We run into that with Chris's games. It's all fine and dandy that he has, I can throw out a piece of terrain. I look and go, wow, it's a blue blob. What the hell does that mean? Well, it's an impassable hill. Why not just put a hill down?
It works in the interim, honestly. Yeah.
I have a pretty good hill I built myself. Not that expensive. About maybe $20 for all the stuff.
I mean, I have all the modeling tools, but I can't find the closed cell phone that they use, that pink stuff. Can't find it anywhere.
Don't need it.
I need some sort of, well, I need the closed cell foam, really, for when I do primering, because the closed cell foam doesn't melt when you spray paint it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to hand paint the hell out of all my terrain that I build because I can't spray paint it because it melts.
Actually, the coolest thing is if you get that foam from, like, Stereo or whatever, just that big stuff, and then spray paint it and let it melt a little bit. Spray paint the suck, you got a mountain. It's cool. It's cool looking. You want it to melt.
Excuse me, I have to go kill a cat.
What he's saying is it's too expensive.
But no, it's too expensive. Lower the price, damn it.
There you go.
The review.
All right, well, that was a good rant. We're on to the wonderful review. Well, unlike previous reviews, I'm not going to actually review an actual game per se. I'm going to be taking a look at the new revised game system license, the GSL, released by Wizards of the Coast on the wonderful updated on February 27th, 2009. I'm looking at it mainly because I have a little bit of experience reading some legal stuff, so I can sort of take you through it a little bit. Section 1 talks about the effective date of the license, how it's 14 days after Wizards receives any the statement of acceptance that you are wanting to license D&D products. After the 14 days, if you have not given them written notice, essentially you're boned. Basically, it still has the clause in it that you can't sell any licensed product for D&D before October 1st, 2008. So, I mean, obviously that day is long past now. So but no that's just the leftover travel. From the, yes, no time travel, going back in time, and releasing the releasing 4th edition material under the GSL, mind you, before, you know, before October 1st, 2008.
That seems fair.
The second clause in it talks about the updates and revisions to the license. Now, a lot of people have been, just the buzz I've heard and read around the internet is a lot of people are pissed off about this. Wizards of the Coast can update or revise a license at any time in its sole discretion by posting the updated license on its webpage. Wizards will indicate on the license the date it was updated. The licensee is responsible for checking whether or not the license has been updated, and waives any right to specific notice of changes. People are getting kind of pissed off about that, that you've licensed this product and WotC is not going to tell you when they revise the license. I, however, think I don't think it's a bad thing. You should be thankful that you should be happy that they're licensing the product in the first place. And I don't see why it would be, and I mentioned this when the first GSL came out, that I don't think it should be Wizards of the Coast's problem, and it shouldn't be their responsibility to make sure that your company's product is up to spec. It's your job to make sure that your product is up to spec and current with a license. That is the nature of business with a licensed product. Just be glad that they're not requiring that you send them your finished product and they have to review it and give it an okay before you release it. That's how most licenses work. That's how those Star Trek and Star Wars novels come out. Is the writer writes it, sends it to the editor approves it, and the editor then sends it on to the licensors who then have to approve it, and then they send it back to the editor with their list of changes, etc., etc., etc. Be glad that that's not there. I think the requirement that you have to keep up to date on the license is reasonable. That's my two cents. In the third section, it talks about the actual licensed products. That it's basically the grant of the license. You can publish, distribute, and sell supplements contained in the licensed materials. Da da da. It's pretty straightforward stuff. You can publish it as a actual published hardcover, softcover, printed book format, or as a single download electronic book such as a PDF. And accessory products to foreign role-playing game to foregoing role-playing games, those sorts of things. The fourth clause talks about the grant, the license grant, basically, that Wizards does grant this non-exclusive, non-tradable, non-sublicensable, royalty-free license, saying basically they'll license it out to this company. This company cannot then go ahead and license it out to someone else. If you want a license for D&D, you got to go to Wizards of the Coast. That's basically what that is. Subsections in that talks about what you have to do to fulfill the license requirements. Is you can reprint proprietary 4E reference terms, tables, and templates described in the 4th edition system reference document. However, I believe in this section it says, let me say...
Is this the example with the elves, I think? They had an example in there somewhere.
Let's see. Licensee acknowledges that Wizards has previously defined each 4E reference. Licensee will not define, redefine, or alter the definition of any reference, 4th edition reference in a licensed product. Without limiting the foregoing, licensee may create original material that adds to the acceptability of the reference. Now, no, I don't think...
They had an example somewhere.
That's probably going down into imagery and derivative works. But essentially it's saying that you can't change the SRD is what I'm getting from this. You can reference the SRD and reference things in it, but you can't like take stuff from the SRD and change it per se.
There was an example somewhere within there, mm-hmm. because they talked, it was about some race. Where basically they said something along the lines, if it says that elves are such and such,
right.
Normal elves have to be such and such, but you could have a sub-race mm-hmm. of something with a different name, and that would be okay. But I can't remember exactly where it's at.
Well, we'll see. The next subsection in that talks about, obviously, the logo and imagery. You have to put a basic compatibility logo on your on your product saying, hey, this is compatible with D&D. The imagery talks about how artwork contained in the 4th edition books is solely owned by Wizards of the Coast, and you can't use that in your product. In Section 5, I think also actually that section also talks about you can use pictures from 4E products as a starting point to create your own pictures. So it's like if you put an image of, you know, image of something, of a zombie in there, they're not going to come after you. Section 5 talks about the requirements and the limitations of the license, and you can't use any of the other Wizards of the Coast licensed or trademarked products, such as Forgotten Realms, Eberron, Dark Sun, Ravenloft, any of that stuff, Dragonlance, all that. Meaning if you take this license, you can't use this license to publish Dragonlance products. You can only publish generic Dungeons and Dragons stuff. If you want a license for anything else, you have to talk to Wizards.
So far, that's all fair.
Yes. I have no problem. I think it's very fair. The next subsection in that talks about the... Let's see. Oh, it talks about the legal text you have to include in the book. So it's pretty straightforward in that, you know, how the old... D20 and open game license stuff, you had to have like this, you know, Wizards of the Coast is the owner of Dungeons and Dragons, blah 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 blah, all that crazy stuff, and that's fine. The next section has the same thing, and it's just the compatibility logo and that and the more copyright information. It also talks about how you can't sell stuff prior to October 1st, 2008. I think that's still just a remnant from the last iteration of the license, and that's fine. License products. No licensed product will include. This is the one that I think is getting some people, is where they define what a licensed product is, and they specifically say that. No licensed product will include websites, interactive products, miniatures, or character creators. Describe a process for creating a character or applying the effects of experience to a character, or use the terms core rules or core rulebook or variations thereof on its cover or title, in self-reference or in advertising or marketing thereof. Can't refer to any artwork, imagery, or other depiction contained in the core rulebook. Can't reprint any material contained in the rulebook except as provided before. I'm gathering provided in the SRD, be incorporated into another product that is itself not a licensed product, like a magazine or a book compilation. I think essentially what this is going to prohibit is stuff like Arcana Evolved, stuff like Mutants and Masterminds, is you can't take the 4E system and use it for something else, basically. You can't say, this is a new player's handbook, this is a new core rulebook for this system, is they're prohibiting that, basically.
Just kind of makes you feel like they feel pissed about the fact that there are game systems that were built off of their rule system, and they didn't get a cut out of the major set. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, because we got screwed over by Mutants and Masterminds, we're going to make sure people can't do it.
And said, man, I wish we had put out Mutants and Masterminds. Yeah, that's just going to happen.
Who would want to play Mutants and Masterminds as fourth then, really? I mean, I like Mutants and Masterminds the way it is.
And Mutants and Masterminds doesn't need to be, you know, upgraded to fourth edition. This is the interesting one, actually. The next one is you cannot, and I know they were specifically pissed off about this with the open game license and the original SRD, is you cannot publish or reprint the contents of the SRD in its entirety or definitions of any 4E references, whether or not similar to those listed in any product published by Wizards. What this is saying is Mongoose can't put out their Pocket Player's Handbook.
Okay, that's fair. That's fine.
Because there were a lot of companies that actually went and released PDF copies and sold them of the SRD. And they essentially, it's like, okay, I'm gonna go to Wizards website, download the SRD, reformat it, put it into a PDF, and sell it for $2, and I'll make profit on stuff I didn't do.
That one is totally fair. The one right before that I have some issues with, but overall I'm still...
I have problems with it. I don't like some of the stuff in it, but you know what? The thing is they can't ever, there's never going to be any way that they're going to be able to release something, a document or a licensing system like this and have everybody be happy. That's there's going to be somebody pissed off somewhere.
But the last it's just the way one it works. I totally agree with, because, I mean, that's just...
Yeah, the ability to download the SRD and then reformat it and then sell it? No, that's bull. That's bull. That's utter bull. I do not blame them for that. But
Selling somebody now, that's...
Their next clause talks about the Dungeons & Dragons imagery. Most basically what it says is it is another one of those clauses of D&D belongs to Wizards of the Coast. You can't use any of the images of specifically Wizards of this without being into this license. You can't republish any imagery of any proprietary characters, that sort of thing. So it's, you can't write an adventure with Elminster. You can't have Drifts running around in there. It also specifically removes from it specifically takes the Battlehenoth, the Beholder, the Carrion Crawler, Displacer Beast, Gowth, Githyanki, Githyrzai, Kuotoa, Mind Flayers, Illithids, Slods, Umber Hulks, and Yuantes out of the SRD. It says you cannot use those in any way, shape, or form because they are proprietary derivative imagery of Dungeons and Dragons. As far as I remember, that's how the old one was. Is you can't, I mean, Mind Flayers are a creation of Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, yeah. They're copyrighted by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
and that's fine.
And legally, that's fine. I think it's silly that it has to be there. But well, that's just my personal...
Well, they have to put this stuff in there.
If they didn't put it in there,
legally, someone would exploit it.
Exactly. Legally, yes.
Their next section is what I refer to as their section that they wish to have absolutely no way, shape, or form of a Book of Erotic Fantasy come out.
Thank God.
It's a quality and standard section where it says you cannot basically... licensed product cannot have... excessively graphic or graphic violence or gore in it. So I mean, nothing over the top on severed heads, no head popping, that sort of thing. No sexual situations, sexual abuse, pornography, gratuitous nudity of human or humanoid forms, genitalia, or sexual activity. Which means, thankfully, no more Avalanche Press half naked women on the cover of books.
Or fully naked.
Depending on which one they're going to put out.
Because I mean,
good lord, yes,
she was
naked
and. It's sad they have to put this in here, but they do. Real-world minorities, nationalities, social castes, religious groups or practices, political preferences, genders, lifestyle preferences, or people with disabilities as a group inferior to any other group or in any way promotes disrespect for those groups or practices or that endorses those groups or practices over another. It's sad, but they do have to put that in there. You can't have the fourth edition KKK sourcebook.
Or the fourth edition Holy Jihad sourcebook.
Yeah, so the fourth edition Holy Jihad sourcebook. I think that's a good thing.
It's a great thing they put that in there, but that's so wrong.
And also, you can't include any unlawful, defamatory, harassing, threatening, abusive, inflammatory, fraudulent, et cetera, stuff.
See, I'm okay with all that.
Well, I'm out. They already took away all my fun.
Yeah, I know.
And actually, could do Conan, but they would have to wear something, and the stabbing has to have less blood.
Well, that's not Conan. That's Conan the Destroyer.
It's light Conan.
I think the term should be CC. Crap Conan.
Their next clause talks about basically compliance with it and non-infringement. Is the licensee is solely responsible for ensuring that their products comply with all laws, regulations, et cetera, of wherever they're publishing the book. So
in other words, don't be a gimboid. You need to actually read the GSL.
There's only
not that. It's if for some reason the country you live in prohibits the printing of books with the color yellow in it.
Don't
that country cannot come to Wizards of the Coast and go, "You guys messed up." They have to go to that company
and go, "You guys messed up.
Sorry."
So essentially, things like that and you can't basically. This is also their. You can't put out a deities and demigods book that has the Cthulhu mythos in it because you can't infringe or violate the rights of any third party with licensed material.
Which is good.
So it's like, yeah, you can put out, if you want to put out a book with the Cthulhu mythos in it, just get their permission. Get the Cthulhu people's Chaosium's permission to do so.
Which, just two things on this. There's one section I'm just concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And number two, what are they going to do with the fan stuff? Which I know we're still asking.
That is still up in the air.
If you look at such sites as Ian World,
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Their next section talks about how basically they have a right to review the products.
I forgot there's more sections.
Yes. They have a right to review the they have a right to review licensee products, and if Wizards of the Coast requests, the licensee has to send them a copy of the product. I think that's very fair.
Yeah, that's still fair.
Then the next whole section talks about how Wizards of the Coast owns D&D. That they're not giving up this right, that they own D&D. You can't use any of other Wizards' intellectual properties like, you know, Star Wars or, you know, Major League Baseball or whatever. Or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or
ooh, Major League Baseball. I want to play that one.
Fourth edition baseball. Awesome, right?
If I'm going to swing a bat, I'm going to really swing a bat.
And this section also talks about how if whatever you make in your licensed product, if you make original characters, that sort of thing, those remain yours. Wizards of the Coast has no right to them.
Hey, that's cool.
Which is good.
That's actually a nice change.
It's your third-party IP. It's like, we didn't come up with it, it's not ours.
So they're not going to swoop down and steal our characters.
And there is a section in here, basically, if so called upon, you must assist Wizards of the Coast in securing its intellectual property by being a licensee.
Are they going to give us weapons?
That'd be awesome. And also, they also have the right to sue the heck out of you if you breach the contract.
With weapons.
With weapons, yes. And how, let's see, I'm going to sort of skim the rest of this because it talks about the termination of the license and how Wizards of the Coast can terminate the license at any time.
Or terminate you.
They do specifically say that upon delivery of valid termination notice, the licensee will immediately cease all use of the licensed materials and destroy all inventory. You have 6 months to do so. It's not an immediate thing. Also, licensee will have 6 months from the date listed on the termination notice to use as authorized here under all licensed products and advertisements for licensed products in the possession as of the termination date. You can't produce new products, but you can like clear out your stuff, basically.
And you can destroy it however you want.
So well, you have 6 months to sell it.
6 months to either sell or destroy. So you could just launch all your product out of catapults on fire.
Wizards of the Coast can stop you from publishing a product if they want.
Well, of course. As long as it's
I think after the Book of Erotic Fantasy fiasco, they decided they wanted to have that ability. Because I know they hated the idea that book was coming out, but there was nothing they could do because of their OpenGL license.
Yeah, you didn't need any of it.
And also, by signing this license, you agree to indemnify Wizards and its affiliates and their employees, et cetera, against any unlawful suing and lawsuits and whatnot. And that's pretty standard stuff. You can't, as a licensee, you cannot assign the license to someone else. You know, Wizards is the only one that can do this. Basically, they do specifically say, Section 16, failure by Wizards to enforce any provision of this license will not be deemed a waiver of future enforcement. So, really, this is their case-by-case basis statement, basically, is if there's a fan site out there that they like, that does good stuff, and they let it go on there, and someone else puts up a fan site and starts putting up crap, they can go to that fan site and say, we're shutting you down. You need to cease and desist. That fan site can't say, well, you let Ian World stay up, and they go, yes, we did, but we have this clause right here that says we can do that legally under our license, and you need to stop.
As long as they... My only thing is I don't want them to randomly start... Like the music industry.
The recording industry, Social America.
It's a different situation, but...
They just randomly start suing people because they feel they violated their copyrights.
Free created things.
They also have their independent development clause saying that if you develop a product and then Wizards comes out and develops a product that's similar to that, you can't do anything about it. There's independent development, basically.
What happens if yours comes out first?
If yours comes out first, that's fine. You can't copyright ideas. You can't.
It's funny because companies do it all the time.
Companies try to do it all the time. There's a difference between intellectual property and an idea.
I'm going to try to copyright everything now.
Like, for example, yes, Elminster is a complete ripoff of Gandalf, but he is a legal ripoff of Gandalf because you can't copyright the idea of the ancient wizard who knows everything.
How about we copyright that? The ancient wizard who knows everything.
You can't.
But you could.
copyright. Well, if you had a guy named license, the Ancient Wizard who knows everything,
by signing the license, you also agree that Wizards of the Coast can choose the jurisdiction of law that they can. And looks like they're talking King County, Washington. I'm the law.
It means that they don't have to fly anywhere to actually sue your ass.
But it's much more fun that way if they show up.
And they have their cover, their what I call covering their ass section here, where is if a court determines that any part of this license is unenforceable, it does not, it doesn't affect the validity of the remainder of the license.
Maybe.
So, basically, and their final thing is you have to agree to the whole license or none of it. So, I really don't see their what a lot of people are griping about. I think it's a very fair license.
But we're allowed to gripe.
You are allowed to gripe, yes.
They
you're
can't
wrong,
copyright
but you're
my
allowed
gripes.
To gripe.
Well, actually, I guess they... No, that's an idea. Now, I just have one little area just kind of...
See, I think you... Were you looking at the FAQ?
Maybe.
Because it's not the actual license.
It must be... So. I must have been looking at... I'm just afraid that some little old random gamer who's not making any money, who just has some free little thing, is going to get swooped down, and Wizards of the Coast is going to eat their brain.
Think about this logic.
If they haven't already tried.
If... Joe Bob out in the middle of the boonies puts up a web page that has that has something on it that's, you know, that's his stuff. And for some reason, Wizards of the Coast finds it annoying. Wizards of the Coast, they're not going to go, okay, well, here's your court summons. They're going to send them a cease and desist letter first saying, stop or else.
As long
and then
as
he has X amount of days to do
that.
So. If he doesn't do so, then he has been properly warned. And then it's really up to Wizards of the Coast if they want to pursue it further. It's going to be up to them. It's, you know, if they feel that they need to take this person to court, it's obviously something that they feel passionate enough about. But I'm going to tell you, most people who have a fan side up is going to be just fine.
I hope so.
Because Wizards of the Coast would be outright, it would be corporate suicide for them to go after fans like that.
I hope they realize
that. They didn't do it
with
Third Ed. They're not going to do it with Fourth
Ed. I don't trust Hasbro, and I don't trust Wizards of the Coast. I'm very
paranoid
of them.
I think it's obvious there are some clauses in here that are obviously, I think, Hasbro poked their nose in and went, well, we need to do this. But I do want to point out, there is no longer is there anything in there about the old OGL, meaning you can put out an OGL product and a 4E product. Looking at the license, how I'm reading it.
That's nice. Most of what's in there, I actually agree with, especially the whole thing about the SRD and printing it and selling it. What kind
of
ridiculous...
Oh, yeah.
That makes total sense.
Lots of people did that with the third edition.
I would want to sue everyone if they did that. So that is totally fair.
But anyway, that's my sort of going over review of the wonderful GSL.
The character creator, not a big fan of
that
idea.
We'll get to
that.
The Gamer's Story.
Well, I was just going to talk about my gaming room that I'm building. So,
which you can instantly go onto the website, and the right-hand side, there's a little yellow sign with a Aliens Power Loader in it. Mm-hmm. You can click on that to go to the webpage that talks about the game room under construction. There are now two videos up about the construction. One's a slideshow video, one's just a brief little rotating thing of what
my
the room looked like at one point.
Photography. So I have a lot of stuff.
We should probably do that with my room too.
I have a lot of stuff, like gaming stuff, and it's taken over the house. So we have this basement that was creepy, horrible, twisted basement. So we started cleaning it up, and I've decided, and actually we've been working on it. We've already put up the sheetrock, and we're working on mudding the sheetrock. We're building a game room. Now, within the game room, I'm hoping to have as many geeky game room stuff as I can within my budget, which my budget is not much.
I think
It's a little bit more than that, but not much by much. Maybe 1% over non-existent.
1%
maybe
1% of existence?
Yeah. Let's make it less than that. Maybe a fraction of that. 1%. But anyway, so the room's about, I want to say, 18 by 20. So that should come to about what? I think
roughly 20 feet by 20 feet. Yeah. That's four squares by four squares.
Yeah,
on each
side.
You
want to do it that way.
But I would recommend, that's kind of small on a D&D scale, so I would recommend expanding. Just you know.
Yeah, and we are working on a template for that, I think.
Yeah, the template's not going to be exactly to scale. I am going to embellish a little bit, just so you know. But I am working on it.
But the things that we're going to have in the room is, I have a gaming table. It used to be a ping pong table. I'm modding the table slowly. The table is supposed to be magnetic. Not so sure how that's working out. The magnetic paint is okay. The poster, or the dry erase paint, though, I'm putting on the whole table, working nice. Very, very nice. You can take notes anywhere on the table. It's really cool. I'm working on containers on the table so that you can store your pencils, things like that. Probably going to steal an idea from another table and actually have things under the table that slide out so you can put stuff on. Still working on that.
I gave you that idea, didn't I?
Actually, no. There's the ultimate gaming table.
There's a lot of ultimate game tables running around on the internet.
Yeah. I seem to recall talking about building slide-out trays for people's notebooks about 3 years ago when we were complaining about the fact we didn't have enough space at your table.
Yes, but there is the ultimate, and they actually have plans, which I may purchase and use at some point.
At $235, I think that's a little expensive for plans.
$11!
The plans are down to $11.
The plans are $11, yes.
$11. Anyway, so, right, we're going to have a super gaming table that I'm going to be building my own GM station that will attach to the gaming table, because the gaming table has to be used for...
Meaning the table is more than meets the eye.
Yes, the table is huge. It's like, what, five by eight and a half? Something like that? It's huge.
The table's 8.5 by 5.
Yeah, it's
basically about 8.5 by 5 feet.
So we've played Warhammer on it. It's huge.
Ginormous. So,
the room's going to be have tons of shelves for everything. I'm going to, because I'm a Lego fanatic, I'm going to have a Lego section to display all my old school Legos. None of the new crap, but the old school Legos. Then we're going to have to paint a station, as well as a modeling train station. There's going to be a sound system, which I'm slowly working on. A mini fridge, which we're going to paint like the Tartars from Doctor Who.
Ooh.
At some point, if I have the room in there, which I should, I'm going to put in a very small bar. We've already got the lighting. Put in some new windows. All the electrical wiring. Chairs, you know.
The only thing he needs all to that. Worry about now is setting up how he wants to do his networking.
I already took care of it. We have wireless all over the house.
Awesome. How'd you do that?
Yep.
Stuck it in the basement.
So it works in the basement.
You all get wireless we did is
it goes
we,
through the floor just fine.
We, this just doesn't
we
go
just
through the,
stuck it through
doesn't
the floor.
Go through the concrete walls.
It won't go through the walls, but it'll
the
come
walls that
through
I,
the
I'm
floor.
Pretty sure would survive a nuclear blast at this point.
Yeah, all we did was.
So if zombies attack, we're going to his house. Because nothing's getting through those walls.
To another router. That's all we did.
Sweet, yeah. Awesome.
Set up one router as a wireless access point in the basement.
Well, good idea.
Works everywhere. And very inexpensive. But anyway,
so I'm still going to wire my house. I'm a geek. What can I say?
You are a geek.
Don't have that type of budget. So
I've already got everything.
Right, yeah, I don't have that. So, but anyway, the pictures are up. Working on it. Should be done hopefully in a month. I don't know. I'm going to keep taking pictures. And if you have any ideas, put them on the forum.
Yeah, go to the forums and talk about where what you want in it or what your suggestions are. Follow the progress of the construction on the website. As I get pictures from Jeremy, I'll put them up there. So check them out,
NatingCrusaders.com. We're going to do all the gaming that I normally would have at my house down there. So
yes, and it will be awesome. Well, we'll be back right after this.
This podcast is brought to you by
RPGNow.com, the leading source for indie RPGs on the web. Visit them at www.rpgnow.com and pick up a few PDFs for your electronic gaming shelf. They've got gaming products for D20, 4th Edition, Mutants and Masterminds, and a variety of other products as well. Check them out at RPGNow.com. And GMDice.com, one of the best sources online for dice of any kind for any game. You can look at their GM blog, Roll Virtual Dice, check out their vast assortment of dice from 4-siders all the way up to 100-siders. And you get a random free die with any order over $10. Visit them at www.GMDice.com.
Well, Nathan has poked out his eye, and we're back for the wonderful random encounters today.
You said we had email.
We do have email. We have copious amounts of email.
Copious?
Copious.
Holy crap. Yes.
So I will start at the very bottom, as mentioned at the beginning of the show. Of course, that Gamers Haven podcast has been nominated for Best Podcast in this year's Roundtable Awards at the Chronic Rift podcast. You can find out more at www.chronicrift.com. I would say go listen to their show and hit their forums and tell them how awesome we are. So,
our one fan will do that.
Exactly.
I bet he, she, or it will.
Yes, our one fan. And surprisingly so, I actually don't have any email to read today from 8th Pagan.
Really?
I know, it's...
Is he dead?
No, I have been talking to him, but nothing really of important importance.
As long as he's okay.
He is still alive.
Yeah. He's like our number one fan.
Yeah, he supports us through...
However, had I known that bitching about how much I hate Wizards of the Coast and their decision about the character builder, had I known that would generate... an inundation of three whole emails.
Whoa. We should do that more.
I would have done it sooner. Really, first up, I got an email from Rick Jones. Now, I'm
Rick
thinking
Jones?
This must be Rick Jones from... Rick Jones, who is the Incredible Hulk's buddy, but I don't know.
Sweet!
If he is, don't send the Hulk this way, please. I apologize profusely. If you are not him, I don't care. you did say... no, I do care. He did say, for the record, if you want to just have the character builder, you can subscribe for 1 month, download the builder, let it update itself, and then cancel your subscription at the end of the month. The character builder will work, and you just don't get any updates. Like, if you did that now, you wouldn't get the Player's Handbook 2 classes, because they're not out yet. He also said, great podcast. So it was good.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for slapping that on the end there.
Yay!
No, and obviously he's not complaining, and we do appreciate Rick Jones!
Rick Jones!
Awesome,
man.
We do appreciate
man.
Rick coming in and saying
awesome.
This. But yeah, you could just go and spend
idea.
$7 and,
we
and
could,
get
we
a...
We could save up $7.
Get a one-month subscription,
you might
download
be able
the
to.
Character builder, and be done with it.
Give me a couple years, I'll get $7.
I think it's annoyed that that's
you
what you
have
to
do
yeah. but... And that is a possibility. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Really, anything beyond Player's Handbook 2, do you need it?
Probably.
Well, Player's Handbook 3.
What's
and then
in it?
4.
You know,
and then
third,
5.
Nothing's in it. They're going to run out
nothing,
of stuff.
Really.
What other classes
but
are going to have?
I do want to point out, if you are an owner of Hero Lab has finally put out their authoring kit, and there is a sample authoring bit on 4th edition in it. You have to, in order to use it fully, you have to spend $20 on their Savage Worlds and
authoring
kit.
Which is probably
bundle,
worth it.
Which was fine with me because I run Deadlands anyway, so.
Yeah, the Savage Worlds kit's pretty freaking
the authoring
sweet.
Kit makes editing the program a lot simpler. It's still a long, drawn-out process, but I find that there's less code needed to do it. But so far, I've had some good luck adding some races and that sort of thing. Nice thing about it, and the way they're getting around it, because obviously we just talked about the GSL.
Yeah, they can't do it.
Well,
do they have
what,
magic?
What they have is, really, they're still releasing it under OGL, and it's just a fourth, they're not calling it Dungeons & Dragons, just fourth edition character builder. And I'm sure WotC's probably going to come after him for it, but that's fine. But you go to Wolflayer.com, which is Wolflayer Development, the people behind Hero Lab. You can go there, download the buy the $20 expansion to Hero Lab, update it all to their newest version 3.1, I believe.
3.1C or something like that.
Go on there and also look in their download section. You can download the D&D Insider Downloader, which is a basic program. Whether or not you have a subscription to D&D Insider or not, what it does is you run it from you put it in the directory that you installed Hero Lab in, you run it from the directory, and it goes out to the web, goes into D&D Insider and downloads all the data from D&D Insider, converts it over to...
That's going
to
end badly.
Yes, I think so.
This is going
to
end
real
badly.
Converts it to Hero Lab stuff and then dumps it in the Hero Lab folder so you can actually use it.
What kind
and
of...
You
what
don't
were
need
they
to have,
smoking?
You don't need to have... Well, I don't know if this... I think this was a fan who wrote this, so...
That fan
honestly,
is going to disappear in the
because,
dark.
Because I'm so annoyed with what Wizards of the Coast and their character builder, go out to Hero Lab, buy their product, buy that, and get this done right now.
Because that fan, he's totally screwed. Yes. They're going to find him, and he's going to die.
But
he's
anyway,
not going to die, he's just going
to
disappear.
We did get our second email on the D&D Insider
we'll
rant.
Never know what happened to him, it'd be like Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We get another email from
probably
Chad.
Bury him in our headquarters as a warning to us.
Don't worry. I've got ventilation underneath all the concrete.
Okay, that'll be cool. We got an email from Chad Stevens. It said, Hey, guys, I love the show, but I'd like to weigh in on the D&D Insider and Character Generator comments in episode 43's rant.
God.
What makes a good deal will vary for everyone, but there are some points where I think you're just off the mark.
We're never off the mark.
No, we're never. Well, we're always right, of course. I mean, that was...
Except on Tuesdays. I hate Tuesdays.
Yeah, we're not right on Tuesdays. The character generator demo does only go to level 3.
Yes.
It's more than a beta. It is functional, but it's just a demo. I do know they have moved past the beta now. You can get the fully functional up to third level version.
Ooh.
That you can't customize.
My games are stopping at third level.
Yeah, I know. Just play to third level and stop. You're done. Also, you mentioned that you didn't expect to ever see the PHB. See, this is kind of... I don't remember saying this, but also you mentioned that you didn't expect to ever see the PHB2 content added to the character generator or to get continuing support. In response to that, I don't remember saying that. If I did, I apologize.
Did I say it?
I might have said it.
Because I say a lot of stuff.
But yeah, I mean, I do know that it is going to be updated if you are a subscriber.
Yeah, but it's one of those things.
If you're not a subscriber, you're boned.
Yeah.
Now, I think what he might be getting at is... even if you have the demo, it's still going to update itself just for the first three levels, which is useless.
I see.
Anyway, this was probably level the first thing that got me the most, is what he says. The character generator is regularly updated with content from new books, like the Adventurer's Vault, Forgotten Realms campaign setting, Martial Power, and just about everything that appears in Dragon are included as options for your character. It'll even allow you to make characters based on preview material like the Barbarian. Which is cool. Not bad.
Yeah.
I understand they've changed the Barbarian quite a bit.
Had $7. Just
exactly.
Sitting around.
Wasn't being used.
This is not even the $7. It's just the three.
Gotta go above third level.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You could probably do it all with the spreadsheet, but adding that much content as it comes out would be a full-time job. Totally agree with you on that. That's ridiculous. Being on a spreadsheet. Love Excel, but yeah, it'd be ridiculous.
I hate Excel. It's a pain in the ass. I'd rather do it in Access.
As far as Dragon and Dungeon, I still feel like I'm getting a good deal. Some people just don't like PDFs. There's no sense in arguing that. It's just a matter of taste.
I hate PDFs.
Still, I feel a good amount of content without having to rely on the U.S. Postal Service to deliver it. That's fine. I have no problem with PDFs.
I love
either.
The Postal Service, though.
They give me everything
right on
time.
I'm upset
that
you can't just, like...
Or even
I really think that they should...
Up.
Yeah. I really think that they should sell the PDF version of... It's like, all right, well, here's issue 392 of Dragon.
Maybe I just want to buy that.
And it's $5 as a PDF.
Maybe I don't want to buy the rest.
Fine.
Maybe I don't want
don't
the rest of
the crap. Don't subscribe to sell it as an individual PDF. I'd be happy with that. Because some of us don't want Dungeon.
Yeah.
Some of them don't want all this other stuff.
I only
we just
bought
want Dragon
one.
Magazine. That's it.
I don't even remember which one I bought. Dragon or Dungeon. I don't know. I only bought one.
No.
Dungeon. You only bought Dragon.
Yeah, he continues.
Because you hated Dungeon, because they had the one that was the flip over where one was Dragon and one was Dungeon.
I was like,
and
was
Dungeon
stupid.
Was crap.
Oh, I hated that. Anyway, he continues. I am disappointed that the online game table isn't up yet. I've been following it pretty closely, and I think you may have some incorrect information here, too. Well, nothing is final yet.
No,
the last I'd heard, they're planning on allowing subscribers who DM to have certain number of quote-unquote guest passes for players who aren't D&D
don't care.
Insider subscribers. Hopefully they'll keep that plan. Since I've moved up to the middle of nowhere, it's almost been impossible for me to find a game group. I'm hoping this will help me get back in touch with some old friends, or at least get into some RPGA events through the D&D Insider game table. Keep up the good work. See you in episode 44, Chad.
I have one problem with the game table. If I wanted to play an online massively multiplayer role-playing game that was based on D&D, I'd play Stormreach. But as we all know, that game's crap.
Yeah, there's that.
I'd just play World War.
And no, that's fine. I think the point we were trying to make is none of us are going to use the game table for anything.
Everybody's right here.
I do understand that's a preference. If you're living out in the middle of nowhere, I think it's going to be great for you.
And
I really do.
I'm happy. Actually, I want to say to Chad, I'm glad he's listening.
Oh, yeah.
And his opinion counts.
Yes. And we love the feedback.
No, it does, because we don't get a lot of emails. So his opinion really counts. But. There is a but. There is. Mm-hmm. Third level.
It sounds like D&D Insider is great for him.
It's
and I think
great.
It's a case-by-case situation. It's not for us, but it's for you,
Greg. If I had the $7, if you want to send me $7 every month, fine. Because I have to admit, it would be great to have all that stuff updated. Just automatically.
It would be. But the fact of the matter is, and this current economic system,
I can use my $7 to do something else.
Yeah, you could use the $7, I don't know, to buy yourself a sandwich to eat. I'm sorry, but eating's a little bit more important to me than a character builder.
We do appreciate...
Because that's all I would use D&D Insider for.
We do appreciate the comments, so keep them coming.
Yeah.
Well, we have one more email.
Is it hate mail? Hate mail?
Somewhat. It's not, you know... You're getting like very polite hate mail.
Is it going to make us cry?
No.
No. Oh, no. Certainly not. We got another email from Tom Mueller. Mueller. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I had to do that.
Bueller.
Tom's Bueller. But we can't
about
say
our can't episode 43 DDI rant feedback. He said, wow, you raised my hackles with that rant.
Sweet.
I subbed to D&DI for a year as soon as possible, and I haven't made a better D&D purchase since I picked up a Dragonite booster when those came out. I think Dragonite was as a miniatures booster.
What was this rant about?
The D&D minis.
Oh, what is it? Bueller?
Right.
Mueller.
The character builder is nice. I can keep all 10 PCs updated for both campaigns I run and create PDFs of the character sheets as needed. For 3.5, I used Hero Forge, and it was great, mostly, but did not automatically update every month with everything into the D&D magazine plus print products. The D&D Compendium is also a tool I use multiple times a week just for access to monsters. Holy shnikes, he says. He actually says shnikes.
Well, that's at least redeeming.
Exactly, yes. Good choice of words. There are a ton of entries. It is still somewhat limited, but the new print option, although suboptimal, is functional. It's just print screen. It's just a print screen stat block thing. They need to work on that, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. The other D&DI tools I don't have much need for, the monster and encounter builders, but hey, those are Jimmy's on the icing. And for the rest of my $4.95 a month. Now, granted, you bought a whole year, so I mean you're getting it for $4.95 a month. I get a friggin' campaign. The scales of war has allowed me to run a second separate campaign. Yes, my group needs more DMs. Not to mention Dragon Magazine, and I'm just fine reading PDFs on my 21-inch widescreen monitor. I sure don't
that
need
one was
to.
Aimed at you.
Yeah, I have a 51-inch. 1920 by 1080 monitor that I can use, but I still don't like reading PDFs, even when the letters are 4 inches tall. It's a stupid thing to read a book on a monitor.
4 inches is obviously not big enough. You need
see, he just likes...
Yeah. I want letters that are 6 foot
he's
tall,
he's obviously not
God
green, and he wants to kill trees. But that's
yes.
Fine. We all hate trees. I mean,
death
we're in Kansas. There are no trees in
Kansas.
Anyway.
Yeah, every place in the world must be a plain like Kansas.
Yes, I sure don't need to have dead tree
mountains.
And
Colorado.
He says here, I sure don't need to have dead tree versions of most articles. I'm not really into hoarding periodicals.
Dead tree.
Neither Consumer Reports, Mental Floss, nor Dragon magazines.
Maybe he's a druid.
And you know, I like the Dragon magazine. Yes, it's fine. Again, I'd like to just be able to buy that and not D&D Insider, but whatever. I don't think it's. This is sort of getting into PDFs, reading PDFs on your computer, and to each their own. You know, if you don't like it, don't read it. As for the cost, WotC is definitely not forcing anyone to subscribe. We know this. I'm not subscribing.
They
didn't send a guy to put a gun to our head to make us subscribe. All 10 of my players, for instance, can get along just fine never seeing any of these DDI features. Even DMs can survive just fine, exactly as we did from 1978 to 2008. Yep, that's fine. However, for the price of... 1.33 frappuccinos a month, my 4E experience is enhanced most satisfactorily.
Yeah, 1.33 frappuccinos, $4.95 a month will buy me a 12-pack of soda pop, which will last me 2 weeks. So,
now,
yeah.
So DDI and the Character Builder are a good value. There's no reason for not to pay a year at a time either, and if one doesn't want to pay for it, fine, Hero Forge will get something up that's comparable eventually. 4E, on the other hand, took some toys from the Wizard and Cleric and sold them to give fighters and paladins nifty stuff. Thus, the 3.5 wizard has a PS4 with a VR interface and a force feedback COD piece, while the 3.5 fighter got a piece of string. The 4E wizard is a 360, while the fighter has a Wii. I think that's his signature. I just think it's amusing. Thanks for the email, Tom, really.
Yes, we appreciate the feedback.
Yeah,
yes.
Trying to make me feel... little by saying you have a 21-inch monitor does nothing because I have a 19-inch 4x3 monitor on my desktop and my screen is still
Nathan's
larger.
Nathan's very touchy about this.
On top of that, I still have a 32-inch TV I can use as a monitor and
Nathan,
a 51-inch.
We just sort of let Nathan talk a lot and I edit him out anyway. So.
Yeah, I know.
Because he doesn't
to
listen to the show, really. When we're talking about this mysterious third guest, people go, who is this third host? We don't have a third host.
Yeah.
So his hackles
They're like
were,
the Stig on
I'm still stuck on the miniatures.
Oh yes.
The D&D miniatures in English crap.
I think the main thing we wanted to get out there for that was if you like D&D Insider, great.
You want to be a fanboy of D&D Insider? Fine, that's your prerogative.
I don't see the point in the price that they've put on it. And everything I've seen up to now for that money is not worth it to me.
The economy gets better, I will say this. If the economy gets better and I get to a better financial
situation,
I am going to try it. Mm-hmm. I am going to try it just because one of us needs to take the leap.
Mm-hmm. But apparently, out there in the vast sea of D&D players, there are indeed three people who do subscribe to D&D Insider.
And they sent us almost hate mail.
I know. It's awesome.
Honestly, though.
Please, guys, you can be more vicious next time. Yeah, we can take it.
Truly, though,
we live in Kansas. We deal with the winter every year.
We do appreciate all your comments. I mean, because that's true. It's good to have a second or outside opinion.
Yeah. On
so
top
if
of that,
it's working for you.
None of us really care how big someone's e-peen is, so mentioning electronic equipment, we don't really care.
Remember, Nathan's kind of
a little hung up on that.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I will wire the house, by God.
That's it for our email. I did want to quickly mention, obviously we talked about the GSL, but right after they announced the GSL, Paizo went and announced their RPG compatibility, their Pathfinder RPG compatibility license at, the very next day. Meaning you can...
Pathfinder?
No.
Pathfinder's system.
It's their Pathfinder RPG. They are putting out a license for that to people, too. So we are at... I think we are obviously now at DEF CON. The War of Editions going on. 3.75 versus 4th edition.
No. We can't call it 3.75. We have to call it Pathfinder Edition.
Pathfinder 3.75.
3.75 versus
4th edition.
4th edition.
So,
Steel Cage.
In the next show, yes.
My money is... Well, 3.75 we'll talk about later where my money is
versus 4th edition in a Steel Cage this Sunday only on
just make up stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. So
I hope it does well.
I hope it does well too. It's interesting.
Keeps WotC on its toes because it's like, hey, they could steal your fans.
But I will tell you, one of the shows I listened to, 2D6 Feet in a Random Direction. One of the hosts on it is a game store owner out in California. Uh-huh. He was talking about how in the last several months, Pathfinder sales have completely stalled.
That's bad. That's bad because then D&D won't have anybody to face off, and they'll be like, "I can put out now."
We'll see. You know.
Well, D&D.
I think Paizo does great stuff.
Yeah,
It would be awesome if Paizo did great stuff for 4th edition. They could also keep doing stuff for 3.75.
Now they can.
I mean Pathfinder.
Yeah,
3.75.
Which one?
3.75.
Pathfinder.
Right, and that's fine. Go with what you like.
See, the thing is, I bought the beta book because, once again, I have problems.
3.75.
Yeah.
You bought the 3.75.
Yeah, I did. But the thing is, I have problems reading text for long periods of times on a monitor.
That's fair.
Yeah. My major problem with why I don't like PDFs. There's nothing wrong with having a PDF. My problem eyes get tired staring at a monitor for 3 hours.
It doesn't matter how big the TV, the monitor is, it's the refresh rate gets to you.
Well, yeah, the thing is if my monitor doesn't do 120 hertz, I'm going to have problems. Yeah, I can watch the fluorescent lights flicker for crying out loud.
And it just gives him a headache. That's fine.
Yeah.
Love you, Nathan. We're going to put you back in your box later.
Yeah, I'm a freak anyways. But I bought the beta
book. Hopefully
you'll
be better after the surgery. You know, they're going to take all that stuff out and replace it with bionics.
Yeah, they'll build me faster, stronger, better. I bought the beta book. And the beta book is okay. There's some obvious problems, but it is a beta.
But I would like to see the door is open. I think with the GSL how it's written, the door is open. You can have a Pathfinder 4th edition. With the throwdown with the licenses now, we have several generic licenses out there now. I mean, you can get a basic role playing Cthulhu licenses out there.
Well, BRP,
there is the Savage Worlds
BRP
license,
and Chaosium Cthulhu
the True 20 license. There's tons of licenses out there now. But now we have two competing D&D licenses. Oh yeah, it's on.
Yeah,
like
it's
Donkey
on like
Kong.
Donkey Kong, and it's going to be like Death Race 2. You know, we're going to have
this time it's
totally
personal?
This time it's personal.
It's the
taking
ultimate,
it to the streets.
It's the ultimate fight of ultimate. What is it?
The ultimate showdown of ultimate destiny.
Exactly.
Yes.
What is that from?
That's nice. Yes.
That's a.
But
it's a
that
song.
We're and on that oh. on that note and on as on Top Gear they say on that bombshell we're gonna leave you. Thanks for listening.
Peace out.
Night.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com. And this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.